I'm Evan Kleiman, and you're listening to the PieCast on Good Food. Once a year, we turn our attention to pie, the buttery, flaky, all-American pastry that's the subject of this bonus podcast special. Our sixth annual Good Food Pie Contest is on the horizon, and the deadline to enter your pie is coming up. Be sure to enter before 11:55 p.m. on Sunday, September 28th. Here's a little inspiration from Zoe Nathan of Huckleberry Cafe and Bakery in Santa Monica.
I believe pie should be messy. I believe, you know, probably the better pie is when you cut open and you're like, uh-oh, get the bowls instead of the plates. Like, I find that that is, it's just so good, I think.
Zoe makes a mean pie. She spills all her tips and tricks in her new Huckleberry cookbook so that you can up your pie game. But today, we're going to talk about pastry cream. I love custard pies, and in particular, cooked custard pies. But I'm intrigued by how you, in particular, use pastry cream in pie. Because you use it both ways. You use it uncooked, and you use it cooked. So talk to me a little bit about pastry cream.
To me, pastry cream is like the pastry chef's aioli. You know what I mean? Like, think about how much stuff you use in aioli. You know, so I always looked at it like that. So, you know, I feel like, I think it's delicious cooked, you know, I think that, but I also think it's delicious raw. I mean, I think whenever we cook it, usually we add fruit, like a lot of times we'll, you know, we do these like large format pies and we'll bake the custard and put like half peaches on it, or our favorite, which we get to start next week, is half like poached pears. I think it's delicious and I think the texture is perfect. I think the key is that you can't, you know, cook your pastry cream too much. You know, I mean, you have to have your pastry cream like a little bit on the thinner side.
And your pastry cream, is it a combination of eggs and cornstarch?
Yes.
And do you kind of hold back on the sugar?
No, I mean, everything we try not to make too sweet. And it's definitely, you know, we try to, you know, hold back on the cornstarch, if anything. You know, we definitely don't have a lot of cornstarch in it because I find it makes it pasty and a little bit floury, and then it just gets too hard.
And when you use pastry cream to go and you're going to cook the pie, do you blind bake the tart first?
It depends. Sometimes we do, like, sometimes we'll do it just in, we do it in, like, the Queen Amando, and that will bake all together, and we don't blind bake that at all. And so we find, like, the Queen Amando bakes in time. But if we do just a traditional flaky dough, then we have to blind bake it.
Describe Queen Amando.
Queen Amando is, it's similar to croissant dough, except there's no sugar in the dough and very little salt. And then on our last turn, you put sugar all over it and salt, and then you do the last turn and you roll it out. So essentially there's sugar and salt in between all the layers in addition to all the butter.
Is it a yeast-based dough?
So it's just like croissant dough. So it's yeasted. To me, it's my favorite. To me, that's my favorite thing to make pies with now. I'm kind of obsessed with it.
Do you ever use it as a top crust as well?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. And you could also, like, instead of laminating it with sugar and salt, a lot of times we'll laminate it with cheese and seeds and use that kind of on the savory side. I love this dough. We've just been playing with trying to laminate our country bread, like our sourdough country bread, and using that kind of for pies. I think that's really good too.
Wow.
It's really fun.
Yeah. Your enthusiasm after so many years is just incredible.
I still like what I do.
Tell me why you call yourself a baker rather than a chef. You started this restaurant. It was your idea. It's your energy throughout. You did all the recipes. You also serve egg dishes and a lot of other kinds of food that aren't baked goods.
I am a baker. I'm not a chef. I love baking. I love what I do. I love the humanness of it. I love the pace of it. You know, if anybody ever calls me chef, I'm immediately like, please don't call me that. First of all, I'm Zoe. Second of all, I am a baker. It's where my heart is, and I think I don't have that same fight that chefs do. I like more of just the smaller lifestyle of it. I think it works for me.
Thank you very much, Zoe.
Thank you.
That was Zoe Nathan, baker owner and all-around mastermind of Huckleberry Cafe and Bakery in Santa Monica. A recipe for her absolutely stunning quince and goat cheese galette and that irresistible flaky dough is on the Good Food blog. One of the questions I get every year from several people before the pie contest is, in which category do I enter my chess pie? So this year we added a cooked custard category just for that reason. Chess pie is a humble pie. It's often overshadowed by lattice crusts and apple filling, but its golden richness represents maybe the most American of all pies, which is why we've asked Lisa Donovan, pastry chef of Husk, a restaurant that celebrates truly American cuisine, to reintroduce us to what you can make with sugar, eggs, and just a little dairy. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. So describe what a chess pie is.
Essentially, it's sugar. It's just as you said, sugar, eggs, flour, butter, and any kind of variation of proportions. And I think the really great thing about chess pie is, I don't know, I think it kind of speaks to what a Southern baker is at heart, which is someone who uses what they have on hand. And I think that's why Southern bakers tend to be a little more from the hip than other bakers. And in my opinion, I think that's why Southern bakers make some of the best baked goods, because they really can just sort of size up their pantry and make something taste super delicious with whatever they happen to have on hand. And this pie is a really, really good example of that exact method of cooking.
A lot of people, when they think about cooked custard, they have in their mind some sort of pale, jiggly, sort of not quite a flan, not really luscious kind of cooked filling. But that's not what you're talking about, is it?
No, this is incredibly luscious, and it's really smooth. And it is less, you know, when you kind of put your spoon into a flan, it kind of pushes back a little bit. It's the opposite of that. There's enough sugar, and enough egg, and enough of everything, and the flour helps to bind it, where it's just this beautiful. And back in Virginia, I think it started out as this transparent pudding. It was sort of the first time we start seeing these ingredients being tossed into a bowl and baked. And then eventually someone was genius enough to put it into a pie crust. But it kind of is this perfect texture that can both slide off your spoon a little bit, but also hold its own shape, if that makes any sense. And it's got a really beautiful delicacy to it. It's really a delicate texture. It's my favorite texture that I've ever had, I think, in any dessert, especially when you put something like buttermilk in it. That really helps.
And to me, what's sort of strange about it is, despite the sort of yeoman amount of sugar, that's somehow when you're eating it, it doesn't feel like something that's super, super sweet.
No, it doesn't. And again, to go back to sort of the addition of buttermilk, I think if you tweak it a little bit, which all baker, you know, all Southern bakers are good at tweaking their things, if you put a little lemon zest in there and a little vanilla, and you really sort of pay attention to how that flavor is going to coat your mouth, it really all plays out really well. It is a lot of sugar. But it's also a lot of other things like eggs and butter. So I think you can't sort of forsake the fact that it's playing with an incredible amount of other semi-naughty ingredients as well.
And I also think that people don't realize that the custard pie category holds a lot of pies that I don't think people necessarily think of as being a custard pie, like pumpkin pie.
It's true. I make my sweet potato pie. I start with a chess pie base, and I add my roasted sweet potatoes to it. And it's the best thing I've ever done with sweet potatoes. and so I've sort of, today I'm making, we have a private party at Husk, and I'm taking a variation of my chess pie, which typically I can't take it off the menu. The buttermilk chess pie is not allowed to leave the menu, according to the people that come in here to eat it. But I take a base recipe and pull the buttermilk out and substitute it with some things often. And today I'm going to make, we had these beautiful Concord grapes, and so I made some Concord grape sorbet, and I'm going to make a peanut butter chess pie. So the options are endless, the variations are endless, and it's my favorite base simply because the texture of it is always spot on. It's always just a silky smooth, beautiful, delicate texture.
Wow, I wish I had a slice right now.
I wish you weren't so far away.
I know. Well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Very welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was Lisa Donovan, pastry chef at Husk in Nashville. We've got a recipe for her unbelievable looking buttermilk chess pie on the Good Food blog. Please somebody make that pie. Speaking of chess pie, I got to chat with the Beekman boys, Brent Ridge and Josh Kilmer Purcell, last week about their latest book, The Beekman 1802 Heirloom Vegetable Cookbook. And I love this little tip about using late summer corn in a chess pie.
People don't realize that corn has an incredible amount of sugar in it. So it actually makes for a really good pie. It's just like, you know, just like you're using beets for cake because of their high sugar content. The corn can be amazing in pie. And in the new Heirloom Vegetable Cookbook, we have a great recipe for corn chess pie.
Now, the chess pie is a cooked custard that has quite a bit of sugar in it. So do you tend to cut back a bit on the sugar when you use the corn?
Yes. The great thing about that recipe, the corn chess pie recipe, is that you can the amount of sugar solely determines whether it's a dessert or whether you can serve it as a side dish. You know, as Brent said, the corn is already sweet itself. So if you don't add sugar, it's still a great little custard and is a wonderful corn side dish.
Oh, I love that idea. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was the Beekman Boys. Their newest book is The Beekman 1802 Heirloom Vegetable Cookbook. One of the most exciting things to me about having this year's pie contest at the Fowler Museum is that we get this whole opportunity to explore what global pie would be, which is always fun. And in fact, one of our categories this year is global pie. So I thought, who better to talk to than Miss Cross Cultural herself, Artie Sequeira, whose new book is Artie Party. Hi.
Is that like Miss Congeniality? I win Miss Cross Cultural.
Well, you already are Miss Congeniality. So
there's no bathing suit competition here, so I am happy.
So, pie.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, just in terms of regular pies, are you a pie maker at home? Do you like making pie?
It is the next frontier for me. You know, I've always been a little intimidated by pie, actually. It is, to me, sort of an American thing in terms of those great luscious fruit pies. But I have always loved small, I suppose, hand pies, or I don't know, what's another word for a hand pie? A samosa.
Very good. Well, and also I'm in the part of India that you're from. Isn't there an English overlay?
There's definitely an English overlay. You know, the thing is, where I'm from in India, which is towards the south, we use a lot of rice and a lot of rice flour, whereas up in the north, where it grows freely, there's a lot of wheat. So samosas were always such a treat for us because it was something outside the norm. We grew up with a lot of steamed rice cakes and, you know, rice in all its different fashions, whether it's a crepe or a pancake or, you know, stuffed into a turmeric leaf or things like that. So samosa always seemed really special to us because it was deep fried bread.
Yeah. Filled with,
you know, meat, potatoes, peas. I mean, anything that the chef had in mind that day.
So what is your take on samosas? What is the, I've always wondered what the dough is.
Yeah. Well, I managed to crack a little bit of the secret open because, you know, we would always buy them. It was part of the tradition. There's a part of Dubai where you can buy material to make clothes, and tailors are all over the place there. So before there were lots of shops and Dubai became the shopping mecca that it is now, we would get our clothes made, which sounds super fancy. Everything fit great. But in that part of town, there was a tiny little samosa stall, and that's what we would get. We would follow mom around for hours and hours and hours, and then at the end, we would get our little samosa. I think the secret to the dough is, at least according to one woman I talked to, is Well, there's a couple different kinds. One of the kinds I've seen, she uses farina in the dough, I guess, to give it a little extra crispiness when you fry it, I imagine.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. She told me under hushed tones. and then I was, you know, doing a little more research, and I found that some people use ghee, clarified butter, in the dough. And there's a very particular ratio. I think it's like a kilo of dough and 200 grams of ghee or something like that. And I would imagine that would also keep it nice and crispy and kind of help with that flakiness. Although not really, because it's not evaporating in the oil. So it's kind of a mystery to me. There are lots of different kinds of samosa dough. There's not one kind.
And what is your kind?
Well, I do a baked samosa. Mostly, I would love to say it's for my waistline, but you and I both know it's not about that. It's mostly because I couldn't comprehend using up all that oil in the kitchen. I didn't grow up with a lot of deep frying. So I wanted to come up with this baked samosa. And so I used a little bit of Western technique. So you rub regular flour with oil. That's the Indian side. You rub the flour in. I would assume it's sort of like shortcrust pastry where you rub the shortening of the butter into the flour. And then I discovered if you add a little bit of buttermilk, it keeps that pastry nice and soft. Because when I was baking off the pastry before, following some recipes that I had found, it was very brittle. So the buttermilk actually helps. And then I add ajwain seeds, also known as carom seeds. They're the tiniest seeds in the Indian compendium. They're so good. They taste like thyme.
Say the name again.
Ajwain.
Ajwain. I've always wondered how to pronounce that.
Yeah. Now I'm, yeah, no, that's how you say it, ajwain. They're great. They're the thing where if you've ever had a samosa and you can't quite put your finger on what that flavor is, I'm betting you money that it's ajwain.
What do ajwain seeds grow up to become? Or are they just raised for their seeds?
I think they're just, as far as I know, raised for their seeds. I've never encountered the vegetable. My mom refers to them as thyme seeds. So I don't know if they grow into some kind of herb. But all we've ever used them for is, you know, to flavor fried things, basically, like bhajas, pakoras, samosas. And then my mom makes a tea out of them whenever, you know, you have an unsettled tummy. She makes a tea out of them.
Mm. So is the filling of your samosa potato?
It's potato. And then, you know, with a nod to the city that I live in, it's potatoes, chicken, coriander seeds, some chipotle, some mango. It's a real sort of cacophony of flavors in a stuffing. That's the great thing about samosa is it's basically as long as you have some mashed potato to hold the stuffing together, you can pretty much put whatever you want in there. There are some people that have never grown up with a meat stuffing in their samosas because they're vegetarians. So I remember when I first was talking about this recipe on my blog, you know, people were like, well, that's not traditional. I was like, in my Catholic pork eating community, it totally is.
So yeah. Would it be ground meat?
It would be ground beef was the one, you know, the kinds that I grew up with. And in fact, there's an Indian dish, there's a recipe in my book for it called keema, which is usually ground lamb, but I do ground beef because that's what we get more availably here. And you could use keema as your stuffing as long as you kind of held it together with a little mashed potato.
Oh, I love that. Now I really just want to make a samosa filling in a pie form.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I bet it would be fantastic.
Yeah, like a big old potato pie kind of
thing.
Yeah,
well, like a cottage pie, right?
Yeah.
Only with a crust.
Yeah, almost like a giant knish.
Oh, another cross-cultural influence.
I'll find it. If it's there, I'll find it.
Thank you so much, Artie.
Thank you, Evan.
That was Artie Sequeira. Her new book is Artie Party. If you need further pie inspiration, well, we have a ton of recipes on the Good Food blog. Don't forget to enter your pie before the deadline on September 28th. It's coming up soon, so try not to procrastinate. And if you're not a baker, I hope you'll come visit me and eat pie at our 6th annual Good Food Pie Contest happening Sunday, October 5th at the Fowler Museum at UCLA. In addition to pie, we'll have music from KCRW DJ Ann Litt, food trucks, a marketplace, kids' activities, and museum tours. Find out all the details at kcrw.com/pie. The podcast was produced by Jillian Ferguson. And I'm Evan Kleiman. Happy baking, everyone.